the last great actor who hasn't dropped dong is Leonardo DiCaprio. And like, Scorsese's a really great director, but I think he's really doing all his fans a disservice.
Listen, I hate to interrupt this very enthralling conversation, but welcome to Hate to Interrupt. I am Ethan from youtube.com/Gulif, and I am joined by
Nick from Stop Culture.
VHS guy Nick.
Yeah, and so today we're going to be talking about two movies from Stephen Chow. The first is the 2001 film Shaolin Soccer, and then the 2004 film Kung Fu Hustle, which Nick recommended this week. So why'd you recommend these this week, Nick?
So the reason I recommended both of these is because I just wanted y'all to kind of get a feel for Stephen Chow. And even though we're going to be talking about both movies, the thing I'm most interested in is how y'all kind of like his style. And what y'all thought of him as a director. And I feel like he's really evolved over the years a lot. And I feel like you can see a lot of evolution between these two movies. So that's kind of why I wanted to hear what your thoughts were on it.
Yeah, I mean, the evolution between the movies is pretty stark. Like, you know, Shaolin Soccer still looks great, but you can tell that there's just like a lot more money and just, you know, time and coordination that was put into Kung Fu Hustle. It's just like the scope of that film is so much bigger than Shaolin Soccer.
It feels more confident for sure.
Yeah. It definitely looks better in almost every way, I would say. But I really enjoy both, though, you know.
What's really crazy is these are not near his first films. He's made hundreds of movies in like the Hong Kong like film area. There's so many movies. If you look through his cinematography, they used to have them on like random, not Tubi, but there used to be like Tubi like apps back in the day, like 15 years ago, and I just watched like Shaolin Mahjong and all these like weird movies that he'd make, and they're always so funny.
So when did you first find out about Stephen Chow? When did you first watch these movies? Back when they came out? Or
Shaolin Soccer, about when it came out, that's when I learned about him, and then I kind of went back and started finding everything else he did.
Yeah.
And then Kung Fu Hustle came out, and I was just obsessed. Like, I've actually probably watched that movie 100 times.
Like, correct me if I'm wrong. Like, when I was a kid, I remember seeing advertisements for Shaolin Soccer everywhere. It was, like, kind of a big movie in America, right?
I think it got picked up by, like, Sony Picture Classics or whatever. Or mm-hmm. There was one of those companies. It was, like, his first movie that got a lot of American marketing. And same for Kung Fu Hustle. So, yeah, I think they're his first movies that kind of got actual pushes outside of just China.
Yeah.
I have never heard of these.
Oh, really?
Well, I guess I'm younger than you guys, but I've not heard of these. I heard of, I watched Sardonicast, and I think they at one point had this on for an episode, but that was the first ever time I'd ever heard the term
Shaolin Soccer or Kung Fu Hustle. Oh, Shaolin Soccer.
I didn't hear about Kung Fu Hustle because all I'd heard about was Shaolin Soccer, and the only thing I'd heard about Kung Fu Hustle was when they were talking about Shaolin Soccer, and we're like, Kung Fu Hustle's good too. That was it. So yeah. I thought Kung Fu Hustle was going to be about dancing for some reason.
I mean, there's a lot of dancing in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite part of Kung Fu Hustle was the Flash scene when they both just randomly turn into the Flash.
Start bolting.
It's not even the Flash, bro. It's straight up Looney Tunes. Like, yeah, that's what I love about these movies. They're so just cart. And that, like, it's great because he uses so much CG, which I hate. But the movies are so self-aware and just goofy that it doesn't really matter. Like,
you wouldn't be able to do that without CG, you know?
Yeah,
100%. But I think the use case makes so much more sense. Like, I think if you think about a lot of these movies that have a large amount of CG that are kind of ugly, and if they just took their like serious level down a little bit and like were more goofy, you wouldn't really care as much.
It's much harder to be pulled out of a serious story or out of a silly story with bad VFX than it is to be pulled out of a very serious tone story with bad VFX.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And you can tell they put their money in the right spots. Like,
oh, yeah,
for the moments that were like supposed to actually look cool, I feel like they put more time into those.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about you guys, but I thought the humor kind of worked better in the first one. Maybe that's just me, but I don't know. I thought I appreciated a lot more of the jokes and humor itself in Shaolin Soccer over Kung Fu Hustle. What was the one that made me laugh? It was it's the guy who's like about to get killed by the soccer ball, and he's like, "Hold on!" And he calls he's like, "Ling, I love you. This isn't Ling. This is her husband. oh, could you tell her I love her? All right, bye. I thought that was so funny.
I think Shaolin Soccer was more slapstick. I think they both had a lot of funny moments, like Kung Fu Hustle, whenever he's throwing the knives and it's just
that was
like,
so funny,
just stabbing back into his arm just, over and over. Getting impaled. I think they're just a little bit different in tone because Kung Fu Hustle tends to be more serious, like more often.
Yeah, I was like when the three the three like tenants that lived in the slums, when they died, I was really bummed out because I was thinking like initially they were going to be the protagonists, but then I realized like, oh, of course that's the like the first guy you see, like that's going to be the guy. But he was kind
of
like,
it's the director.
that's Stephen Chow.
Stephen Chow.
Oh wow, I didn't even know that. But
main character in both movies.
Yeah, well he was great. He was really good in both of them, I think. But
so let's give a little bit of a rundown of what, let's start with Shaolin Soccer and kind of tell people what it's about.
Yeah, you give us the plot, sir.
So basically there's a soccer player and he's a really good soccer player, but one of his teammates is basically just a typical evil archetype and breaks his leg with a bat. And so he has to retire. And
the mafia to break his leg.
Oh yeah, he hires the mafia to break his leg. Sorry, and then he has to retire, and he's just a big loser that's just basically the errand boy for the evil guy. And then he finds a random street urchin who knows kung fu, the magic iron leg technique.
Yes,
and he basically hires him. He brings him on to make a team with all his other kung fu friends who have various kung fu powers. And they make a soccer team and try to defeat the evil man's team.
Wait, no, I thought he goes to the old soccer, like Golden Leg's old teammates, wasn't it?
No,
I thought they were just like people he knew.
They're all Stephen Chow's mostly characters. Like, basically, they went to like Shaolin school together or whatever. Like, because remember, he's like, "Thank you for reactivating our kung fu."
That's right.
Well, they weren't really young. A lot of them were like balding.
That's true.
And middle aged, like
visibly. Yeah, the guy that called.
I liked it. It's like, why am I so handsome and I have no hair, and you guys are ugly and you have full heads of hair?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's just true. Like the soccer scenes themselves were so great. When I was watching it, I took a video of the time they were just like breakdancing in the middle of the field, and the ball is just like going in a circle between them. That was fucking great. But yeah, my main thought watching this was like, Edgar Wright is definitely extremely influenced by Stephen Chow. You know, you just watch Scott Pilgrim. It's like, it seems like a gamified, like video gamified version of a Kung Fu Hustle, you know, and Shaolin Soccer. Mm-hmm. Just like the way that, well, we're on Shaolin Soccer. I'll save my thoughts for later, but on Kung Fu Hustle. But yeah, I had a fun time watching. I will say, like, with Shaolin Soccer, I wasn't like really fully engaged and like grabbed by the movie until the soccer tournament started, and then I was like, okay, this is awesome. You know,
I'm in. Yeah.
It does have a lot of like, you're kind of just there for the jokes at the beginning. It's kind of a lull, but. You can definitely see, not only does he have, not only is he very influential, like you can tell a lot of people take from his movies, but you can see like directly all of his influences too. Like in the, whenever he's kicking that soccer ball at the wall and it's just showing the like the water glass like shaking, like it's just a Jurassic Park reference. And then immediately after they have like a fucking Saving Private Ryan like war scene, and he's like crawling through the battlefield. So he's like, he has so many, like, he can tell he watches a lot of American movies.
Yeah.
I really, honestly, the smaller jokes are the ones that make me laugh the most in this, where it's like the first team they go up against is like all the thugs that beat him up, and he's just like, hey, what's that? Why do you have a wrench in your shorts? And he's just like, well, I'm a mechanic and I'm on the clock. And he's like, well, makes sense. All right, let's go play.
I will say, like, I don't even know if this is a negative thing to say about Stephen Chow's movies, because I think it's kind of his style. But, like, I do think that a lot of his films feel very distant. Like, it's very hard to, like, actually feel, like, a connection to his characters, especially, like, the protagonists, because they don't feel necessarily like real people. They feel kind of like an archetype. And like,
yeah, they're very caricature-y.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, like, basically the only like enjoyable thing about these movies was like the visual spectacle of it. I wasn't connecting with the story much at all, but like the visual element of it is so impressive that it kind of like almost doesn't even really matter, you know, Like, it's just so fun to watch. It's like, because it's almost constantly fucking fight scenes and action scenes. That's why I like Kung Fu Hustle more than Shaolin Soccer, because Shaolin Soccer, there's like a whole chunk in the beginning that's not really, none of that action is really happening. Like, there's a little bit of it. But in Kung Fu Hustle, it's like basically nonstop, which is yeah. great. And I did feel more emotional connection to the characters in Kung Fu Hustle. Like the whole flashback scene with the lollipop and stuff. And
the lollipop girl scene actually kind of makes me tear up a little bit. I'm like, damn, dude. Because I feel I've connected to her character more than I do the main character, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's like, I want to be a bad guy. The good guys never win. And that's because he got pissed on by a bunch of bullies.
That's what I was like. You guys were like, that scene made me cry. And then I was like, as I'm watching it, I'm like, they're pissing on his head.
Yeah, this is literally no, pissed on this man.
Not that part. I'm talking about like whenever like she's like so excited to see him and he just breaks the fucking pop.
Oh, yeah. That was messed up.
She looks so sad, bro. I was like, damn, dude.
I love the like forlorn look she gives him when he steals the ice cream. And he's like, "Ah, I stole your ice cream!" And they're just screaming on the tram, and she's just like, reaching out.
Well, we can we'll reference Shaolin Soccer throughout, but let's go ahead and get to Kung Fu Hustle. What are y'all's ratings for Shaolin Soccer?
I'll give it a 7 out of 10.
I think it's like, good. Yeah, it's fun. I'll go 6 out of 10.
I think I'm like a 7 as well.
But right. But yeah, so in Kung Fu Hustle. I was just imagining.
What is this about?
I was well. Before we do that, I was just imagining Nick crying while he's watching a boy pissed on in his head by a grade school bully. He's like,
there's so many like scenes that like, if you watch Shaolin Soccer and then watch Kung Fu Hustle right after, like they're so immediately related. Like even that pissing scene, the guy's like pulling his pants down to piss on him, and then the one before he pulls down his pants and makes the guy put the underwear on his head. There's so many scenes that are like direct parallels to each other.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
I was told like in Kung Fu Hustle, I was totally rooting against the landlady in the beginning, but I mean, partially that's because
she's so
badass. A leftist who hates all landlords.
Because she's a landlady. Yeah.
Yeah. But she ends up becoming like a big protagonist, or not a protagonist, but like a good guy by the end, you know? So you're rooting for her.
Where they fight Mr. Beast. Yeah.
Dude, she's so funny. That actress was so funny, bro. Whenever she uses her chancla to slap the guy in the head and then slowly the shoe comes around. Like, yeah. Just little special effects, like, gags are so funny.
So,
yeah,
like,
I don't know.
Yeah, go on, Ethan.
No, because, like, I know you guys said, like, the VFX don't bother you because it's so, like, it's mostly a visual spectacle and it's comedy. I was getting a little bit bummed out in Kung Fu Hustle because it felt like there was just so much where it was just rubber people flying over the screen where I'm like, I feel like they had more limitations in Shaolin Soccer, so they had to, like, actually do more practical stuff. I'm not saying they're not doing practical stuff. It just feels, it felt a little bit too floaty. I know this is a ridiculous film.
Are you talking about the scene at the end whenever he's just basically kicking people through walls and stuff at the end?
Oh, just in general, there was a lot more like where they would just, you know, there would just be a full CGI human, you know, getting flung to the ground or stuff. There's just a lot more use of basic CGI elements that.
Yeah, a lot of really practical, a lot of really impressive practical effects and wire work, though, in Kung Fu Hustle.
I think that was a product of the time. They just weren't there yet. Because if you look at movies like The Matrix Resurrections, you see the same issue, or Matrix Reloaded, when he's fighting all the Agent Smiths.
Oh, no, I think that's exactly what I was thinking of. And I was like, well, at least it's not that bad.
Yeah, and I was about to say, it honestly looks better than that to me.
Yeah, because they don't fully go CGI close-ups.
And also, they had the... They lean into the comedic aspect of it. Like, they're more self-aware that it doesn't look perfect. Like, whenever he's, like, at the fight at the end, when he's fighting all of those Axe Clan dudes, and he's kicking them through walls, it's like, puts the pinball sound effects.
Ping, ping, ping. Yeah.
The musical fight was the best part of it for me.
That was so sick.
I feel like Doctor Strange kind of ripped that off. The second one, you guys remember that? Did you see that movie? Uh-huh. When he's fighting the evil Doctor Strange with his keyboard and everything, but yeah, that was so cool. Just the way that
summoning
and
ghosts.
they would play. I don't even know what instrument that is. It looked like a giant.
Oh yeah,
I forget what it's called.
I don't sitar.
A guitar. It's a guitar.
It's a big ass guitar, I guess. But like, I liked how they whenever they would strum it, it would be like different kinds of attacks would come out. Like first, it was swords, and there was like some fists, and like
it,
evil
they felt
dead
like
pirates.
A fighting game character.
Yeah,
yeah, it felt like a Dark Souls fight.
The brother
is a modified Guzheng, according to Google AI.
Oh, nice. But like brother Sun in the Chinese beginning was like, yeah. So you guys are great like the best assassins in the world or whatever. And like, no, strictly speaking, we're musicians. And I was like, what does that mean? And then you find out, it's like, oh, I get it now.
And I think all of the villains were really effective too. The main X clan or X gang leader, like him just being kind of a huge piece of shit that doesn't really have any power. He just like smokes, compared to the actual cigarettes. Bad people.
Yeah.
And then yeah, there's the crocodile cigarettes. Guy. He's just actually crazy.
Yeah.
What the Mr. Beast?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I like you're saying the CGI wasn't great. I mean, for 2004, it was pretty damn good, I think. Especially that musical fight. Like that looked very good to me, you know, for
it wasn't
time.
It wasn't that it was bad. It was just it felt like there was just too much of it to where I was getting a little like, oh man, come on, I want more, you know. Like I do think it looks good. There's one shot specifically where I went, oh shit, that's like really impressive. It was I think it was during the musical fight. And it's whenever someone grabs like a spear or a piece of wood and it like twists and like as it's twisting it's breaking and you're seeing the wood split apart while it's like the torque is pulling it. And I was like genuinely it had like really good physics on it and I was like, damn, that's like actually impressive. The textures weren't all there, but yeah, like you said, it's 2004.
Yeah. I like when there's an attack that like slowly goes up their arm and like destroys their clothes, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it does like the so twisting funny. Of the
yeah.
skin.
Yeah, like an Indian cool. burn.
Or when he punches the guy and the punch just goes through and it blows out the back of his shirt.
Yeah.
And it's been said like there was a big rumor that he was like trying to immigrate to Canada a long time ago, like in the 90s. It'd be crazy to see what he would have done in America for his career, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he could have had like a Bong Joon-ho sort of trajectory, you know, like yeah. starting to make more English films or whatever to reach an American audience, if that's what he was. Because from what you say, it seems like that's what he was interested in doing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he has a few movies that are still pretty Americanized. After he has a Journey to the West, which was really good, and he has The Mermaid, which is also
they're English speaking a lot.
No, but I don't think his movies necessarily have to be English speaking, just because of the themes they touch on, and like because his movie, you know, I don't feel like his movies feel very foreign. I mean, I've watched some movies that like feel like they're made for people who in France and shit like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I think in order for a movie to be big in America, it kind of has to be an English speaking film, you know. I mean, there's exceptions
Parasite.
To that. Yeah, Parasite, but that's kind of like yeah. the only one I can really think of, you know.
That's but it's also like a thing that's taken so long to get to that point to where we're like finally people are given a chance. The fact that a foreign language film won Best Picture is like was huge, and it was huge for that exact reason. Yeah.
I'm trying to think, are there any other ones that like are actually foreign speaking that did well?
Yeah, sure. I mean, but they do well in like cinephile circles, obviously, but not in mainstream. Yeah,
the problem with that is like the amount of people that I talk to that are just like, oh man, I don't want to have to read while I watch a movie. I'm like, all right, you honestly definitely have watched a movie where you have to read a piece of paper in the movie.
Yeah,
I honestly think this is like the one place I think AI has a place in cinema, and that's for dubbing movies in other languages. Like I think if you could have the dubs. Original voice actor's voice read or do something in English with like the mouth being corrected, I think that could honestly help a lot of like international movies,
like AI correcting the lip movements,
the mouth
and
movements
too.
And stuff.
Yeah, correcting the lip movements and then also using the original actor's voice to do the voice for the character in other languages.
Mm.
Yeah. I think that would be really cool, and I think that would be probably ideal for the movie because you don't want to hear somebody else's voice for your acting, you know.
I mean, I guess I that's know. What they did with The Brutalist, right? So like something kind of like that, right? Were you telling us that
they basically corrected
that
they corrected his
disqualified from being an Oscar winner.
Yeah, because that's not that's the original version of the movie. I'm saying
no, I'm just saying like the technique would be kind of applicable to what you're talking about.
Yeah, maybe. I don't 100% know how they did it, but yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind watching, you know, foreign language films and reading subtitles and stuff, but I will admit, like, there is something that you're never going to have the same viewing experience as someone who doesn't speak Mandarin or Chinese or whatever this movie was. You're not going to have the same viewing experience and, like, really grasp the little idiosyncrasies and intricacies of the language that's being spoken, because you just don't know what they're, like, how they're actually saying things. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're just reading it on a screen. You're never going to really engage with it as much as somebody who understands the language. You know what I mean?
That is true, but also AI won't ever allow you to, like, be in that position, because you can have jokes that are written for that audience that are just, like, culturally not relevant to us.
Obviously there's gonna be it. But I'm not saying that humans shouldn't have a part in it as well. I'm just saying that that's a lot of manual work to do every language. I'm not
I know. I'm just saying there's never going to be a situation where you 100% truly understand, like, exactly the translation that they're saying, unless you speak the language.
Yeah, I agree. But it'd still be better, especially for a lot of people that don't like subtitles. I don't mind them either, but I know, I understand why people feel that way. Because a lot of people don't want to put all of their focus into something.
Because they have really bad attention spans, like my generation. Exactly. They're cooked on TikTok brain rot.
Yeah. But I think it's like a focus or attention thing, but it's also what I was talking about before. Like, I think it's just harder to connect with films that are spoken in a language that you don't speak, you know. There's a distance between you and the film.
There's a disconnect at times, yeah. I think it depends on the subject matter itself, because you can see something like Parasite, where that was such a universal theme. Sorry to steal your thunder. But yeah, Parasite has such a universal theme that, like, everyone was able to connect, whether you fully understood the language or not. Like, everyone knows what it's like. Well, a lot of people know what it's like to be poor and in that position and have the same feelings those characters are feeling. But yeah, something might not connect otherwise, unless it's a very universal feeling and story.
Yeah, that's what I was going to kind of say about these movies too. Like I think it depends on the subject matter, because if it's a situation that you and your society aren't really going to understand, it makes it 10 times harder to connect with it.
So why do you guys think that's why I'm just like, I then it makes me think, why the fuck is the Transformers movie so popular in China?
I don't know. I think Transformers movies are just all spectacle almost.
That's
true. Like you just have to like watching big robots. I mean, fucking people in Asia seem to love, like, what are those things called? Gundams. Kaiju. Yeah, kaijus and Gundams and stuff. So, like, mechs, that's basically, that's Transformers, you know. You could just watch super high tech, technologically advanced Michael Bay movie that's just like sounds like an avalanche in your ears and it's just like sensory overload, you know. That's kind of a universal thing, I think.
And the film scene in China, even though China is absolutely massive, most of the great films that come out of China are from Hong Kong. So which isn't really that big. And it's also kind of being fucked over by China because they want it to not be its own country, basically. So, I mean, there just isn't really that much good cinema coming out of China. So, yeah, they are kind of contained to what we have in America a lot of the time.
Yeah, it sucks they have to change the marketing for. Remember with, like, Black Panther and stuff? Like, they wouldn't.
Oh, they have to hide the black people?
Yeah.
Same with the Star Wars Force Awakens. They took Finn off all the posters.
Yeah. And they have to.
It's pretty fucked up.
They remove. I think because in the Eternals, that was like the first gay kiss that was in a Marvel movie. I'm pretty sure they removed it for the Chinese version.
Yeah. Not shocking.
Yeah.
I mean, like, let's not act like Disney has integrity.
Yeah, true.
If it cuts into their bottom line, which is profit, then they're going to remove that shit.
I saw that Tencent bought Ubisoft recently, and I saw that they're going back and censoring a lot of the, like, games that Ubisoft made. Like, on Far Cry 4, there's, like, one of the, like, the, there's some chick with boobs out, and they just put a bra on her. Just random shit like that. They just take out the boobs for Tencent.
I mean, have you guys been looking into the whole Snow White controversy at all?
I don't. What is the controversy? It's just people don't like Rachel Zegler.
Yeah, but I think
I saw someone say that Rachel Zegler is to all these like grifting channels what Brie Larson was to them like 5 years ago.
Oh yeah,
totally. Like they make like 10 videos a day about her.
To be fair, I think Rachel Zegler is probably worse than Brie Larson. In terms of being annoying,
Brie Larson is more talented.
Brie Larson is much more talented.
She's a genuinely great actor.
I've only seen Rachel Zegler in West Side Story, and she was really good.
She's a good singer, but she's not a very good actress.
Well, she made a video like a Fuck the Haters type video where it was like, you know, people are trying to keep, she was crying and she was like, people are trying to keep me down, like speaking in the third person. It was very cringe.
She's very much of an egomaniac, like you can tell. Yeah. It's not a good look. I'm sure the Snow White movie's fine, but like I heard it's not, but whatever. But like she just seems really annoying. So I understand people disliking her.
Yeah. I mean it's a double whammy. People are getting really tired of these live action Disney remakes of all the classic animated films. I think, you know, the grifter people that you're alluding to, Ethan, they've been mad for years since Rachel Zegler was announced that she's like, I don't even know like what her nationality is, but she's not white, I guess.
I think she's like half white, half Hispanic.
Yeah. I mean, she looks pretty white to me. I don't know why.
Rachel Zegler?
Yeah. I don't know why it's a huge issue.
She's her mom is Colombian and her father is Polish. So she's like half white, half Colombian.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, that was like a huge controversy that they cast.
I think the whole thing is Snow White. She's called Snow White because her skin is super white.
Yeah.
That was kind of the original story.
Yeah. It's not Snow Caucasian woman story.
I don't really care about that part. It was more so like she basically said like the original story sucked in one of her interviews. She's like, yeah, they're changing some things. The original story was ass. I think they were originally trying to hire like actual dwarves to play the dwarves. And then remember all the Peter Dinklage comments?
But then they made like horrible CGI abominations.
Yeah.
But there's actual like little people cast in it.
They should have hired dwarves.
You think little that would
people.
Have been better?
What do you say?
Real people
are always better. What, I don't care, whatever. I'm sure they wouldn't be mad.
Wow. You don't care. Do you hear that, audience?
they're chill.
Peter Dinklage said, I was a little taken aback by the fact they were proud to cast a Latina actress as Snow White, but you're still telling the story of Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. You're progressive in one way, but you're still making that fucking backward story of seven dwarves living in a cave. What the fuck are you doing, man? Have I done nothing to advance the cause for my soapbox? I guess I'm not loud enough. Damn.
So basically he's saying don't hire dwarves or you're a bad guy.
Well, I think it seems like he has a problem with the story, you know.
The story itself. Yeah. Like, I feel like, but then that just takes away the jobs of seven people.
Yeah, I'm sure like seven little people. I feel like little people sound so much worse than dwarves.
That's what
am I crazy?
I know, right? Yeah,
little people sound so demeaning.
Yeah,
it's. I'm not. Yeah, what's up, I'm bud? Sure. What's up, little man?
I totally agree with you, but I guess that's like the politically correct term. I'm pretty sure, like that's what you're supposed to say.
Person of short stature.
That doesn't work. That's too fucking long. What's wrong with dwarf? I mean, like
it sounds like a medical term, the
condition is called dwarfism, isn't it?
But even dwarfs in the fantasy race are sick. Dwarves are sick objectively.
Yeah, I love dwarves.
Gimli's like one of the best characters in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Well, let's give a rating for Kung Fu Hustle and then get into our next topic, unless anyone has anything else to say.
No, I think these are fun picks, and I think they were great. Yeah.
So yeah, Kung Fu Hustle. I'll do 6 out of 10 again.
I'm going to do this same as the first, 7 out of 10. I think it's. I prefer Shaolin Soccer, but I'll give it a 7 out of 10 still.
9.5.
That's Whoa. All right.
Nice.
That's pretty big. What's the last half you're missing?
What's that 0.5?
I couldn't quite. I wish they would have leaned more into making me connect with the main character a little bit more.
That's fair.
I think the I want to be bad thing is just not necessarily an effective enough
motivation
driver for him. Yeah. And then also at the end, whenever he kind of just gets his like face pounded to a pulp and then he just wakes up and he's kind of the good guy. It kind of doesn't necessarily make sense.
He's the Lisan al-Ghaib, dude.
Yeah. But I mean, there's just little things. And I think, but it's hard to say that because there's also part of what I love about these movies is the way that he kind of doesn't care about things always making sense. Like, for example, in Shaolin Soccer, whenever he kicks the can like really far and then he later on the coach walks up and he finds the can in the wall and he pulls it off and the wall breaks down and miraculously there he is on the other side of the wall. Like,
yeah,
it makes no sense that that would be the exact location, but it's a sick transition.
It is. I was thinking that exact same thing. I was like, that was pretty badass.
I feel like
same thing.
It doesn't make any sense.
Same thing in Kung Fu. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I mean, it's just like that. That's kind of like his methodology is like, if it looks sick, I'm going to do that instead of it looking less sick and making sense. You know, that's exactly it, but it works.
Like whenever he lights the firecracker, throws it over the wall, and then miraculously the fucking gang leader is right on the other side of the wall with like 30 people.
Yeah.
Like it's so funny and stupid, but it just works. And I wish more directors in the US would do things like this.
Yeah.
If they're gonna make these over the top stupid movies, like at least make it fun.
Yeah, it's this movie is not concerned with realism at all. Like basically everyone has superpowers and that's never explained. That's just like, you know, that's just the way this world works. No one abides the laws of physics and that's fine.
No.
It's never mentioned or questioned or anything. It's just like that's how it is. It's pretty cool.
Like genuinely think of what's the last movie in the United States that just kind of gave no fucks and did it as well as these movies?
Everything Everywhere.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah,
I'd but say still, that one. But that still one didn't go. That one was still very serious in tone near the end, but like it didn't. I'd say it didn't give a fuck to a point.
Yeah, but if we're gonna it definitely abides by that rule that I was talking about. Like, if it looks sick, we're gonna keep it more so if it makes sense. You know, like.
Yeah, I agree.
That's true.
Because it's just like
it's
multiversal wackiness in that movie, you know. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like a Stephen Chow movie that actually kind of has a heart.
Yeah. Well, so wait, did you give you gave your rating, Nick? But
9.5.
But I think it would be a good transition because we were just talking about Snow White. Like, Nick, you had this this topic you wanted to talk about, like Jon Favreau and stuff. You want to?
Yeah, so my big thing, I used to be in love with Jon Favreau when Chef was coming out, when he did the first Iron Man. And I mean, even back in the day when he did like Swingers and stuff like that with Vince Vaughn, that shit, I've loved him forever. And it was super cool to see like a huge swarm of people also loving him, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then he kind of just started taking jobs, right? Just taking whatever he could to make some money, like doing the Lion King movie, which you could tell
he did that for
the fuck of it. And then even I think he maybe necessarily didn't not care about like Cowboys versus Aliens, but that movie wasn't very good.
That was him? And he just, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think he was one of the writers too. But there's just so many things that he did that just haven't really lived up to his reputation. I'm wondering if y'all have any other directors like Jon Favreau that were kind of like built up on this massive pedestal and then had it kind of all crumbling down.
I do have one actually that I just thought of. It's not as big of a, they have been this big famous director, but it's two that had like a very good track record and they were on like, they had made one of the most successful movies of all time. That being the Russo brothers. And then they have not been able to make anything after that on their own that isn't tied to anything, because like even before the Avengers movies, Winter Soldier, Civil War, they were still doing Community, and that was like critically acclaimed, their famous paintball episode. But everything after Endgame has been like nobody cares.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just generic.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, yeah. I it's hard for me to even put them in the conversation because, like, they, you know, they did Community and I think worked on some other TV shows and stuff before that. But, like, their entire filmography is within the Marvel machine. And it's like, if you're, it's like, you know, known or in Hollywood that if you're a director working in the Marvel machine, like, you're not really the director in this, and like the director's role in the Marvel machine doesn't have the same job basically as other movies. Like Feige's there like controlling everything. You have to work within a very like parameters that are set by the machine of Marvel, you know.
Yeah. You almost never get to write either unless you're James
Gunn. I also don't think that they were household names that people were like, the Russo brothers are amazing. I'm so excited for the next thing they do. I think people said that they did really well with those movies, but I don't think people were like chomping at the bit for the next Russo brothers project.
Yeah, that's true. Because like you almost don't even like people don't credit them with making the most financially successful movie of all time. They credit Marvel with it, you know. Like yeah. Sure, the Russo brothers they have the director credit or whatever, but it's not really thought of that way. It doesn't feel that way. You know what I mean?
It's not a Russo brothers film. It's a Marvel Studios film.
Yeah. Which is like, that's baked into the cake of what Kevin Feige wanted to do with Marvel, which I think, you know, ultimately is smart for him if he wants the cinematic universe to feel cohesive. I guess, James Gunn just was really able to get more creative control than anyone else. I wonder why that is, but.
Maybe he has some dirt on Kevin. maybe. I don't know, because he wrote the first one by himself, right? I think.
Yeah.
He just proved himself really quick.
I think it's honestly that they knew he could walk and do something else.
Yeah.
And they didn't want him to, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But yeah, just going back to Jon Favreau for a second, like, I think he started getting up there in age, and he probably was just like, all right, I can go make some passion projects and not make a ton of money, or I can just like be a Disney journeyman director, you know, and make millions of dollars every year, you know. It's like that calculation. Once he became the Iron Man guy, now he gets an executive producer credit. I'm not sure if it's on every Marvel movie. I think it's on any Marvel movie that Iron Man appears. So I'm not sure if he's getting them anymore because Robert Downey Jr. isn't in it. And I don't know if he'll get it when Doctor Doom is, because that's not Iron Man. But yeah, he's made so much money from doing that. And then just like, you know, once he did that, Disney hired him to do Star Wars and then all these live action things. So it's a paycheck.
But don't you think that's a bit disappointing, though? Because whenever you build up that kind of reputation and you have that much like pull within an organization, you can be the change that company needs. He could have made every Disney movie he made as good as Iron Man. Obviously, they probably wouldn't let him, but I don't know. I wish he would have fought a little harder.
Well, it seems like, I mean, Mandalorian was good, right? I've only ever watched the first season of that show. I heard it.
That's
like,
all.
Kind of falls off,
it goes down from there. Yeah.
It's not good.
It becomes Cameo City where you'll just be like, do you remember this character from Clone Wars? No? Well, too fucking bad. Here they are. You better care about them.
And Favreau is involved for all
he's like seasons. He's like the overseer.
I think he only directed the first season.
Oh, mm-hmm. I mean, that there you go. But like, I think he did kind of start a sort of culture change at the, you know, Disney Star Wars because of Mandalorian.
People were starting to feel like there might be a change coming.
Yeah, because Mandalorian was so different in tone, like scale. It was a very small story. There was no empire, not really. I guess there was like some Jedi.
I mean,
he just
made a spaghetti western in space, which is kind of what Star Wars was supposed to be in the first place.
He expanded the scope of what Star Wars can be like, and because of that, I think things like Andor are able to exist because he kind of like changed, he shifted the paradigm over there, you know.
Kind of, but then they immediately did Boba Fett, which was fucking dog shit. They did Obi-Wan. They kill the Acolyte. They kill every bit of goodwill they start to gather.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like true. It's like they do something good and then they go, okay, well, we got to make 5 more copies of it as quickly as we can. And then it just, you know, people get tired of it. How many people are like, I only care about Andor. I'm not watching anything else but Andor. That's where I'm at, and I know a lot of people are like that.
Yeah. I mean, if another big, I know they're working on another Daisy Ridley Star Wars movie. I'll go see that for sure. But
yeah, it's weird we haven't had one or any, like, it feels like every announcement they make for new Star Wars stuff is like, well, they might cancel it in a month. I don't know. Everything's really inconsistent with Lucasfilm right now.
Yeah.
Except for some shows.
I mean, why is that because of the backlash to, you know, the first trilogy they did? They're like,
it
scared?
Has to be. I think they're just like, we don't want to fuck up again and yeah. lose all the goodwill we have.
I genuinely feel like we might. They're waiting for some reason to kick Kathleen Kennedy out. I think they're trying to get
rid of
her.
Well, she retired. She's done.
Yeah,
she's already gone?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was why they were delaying a lot of things, though, because they were trying to get her out.
Yeah.
Because I don't think she's done this. What, like, I haven't think so. Single good decision's been made.
She's worked, like, with Star Wars?
Hiring yeah. Rian Johnson. I like Rian Johnson. I think he's a very talented guy.
I actually don't like him. I've seen a lot of his interviews. He seems like a pretentious dickhead.
No, I didn't say he was pretentious. I said he was talented.
You could be pretentious and talented.
Yeah,
but I don't. What has he done that's good? I've seen one good movie from him.
Dude, both Knives. Well, the first Knives Out, or Killer is great. I think the second one isn't as good, but it's still really.
I'm mixed on Looper.
I like Looper a lot, and I really like The Last Jedi.
I haven't seen Brick. I have not seen Brick.
Great.
Brick is the only movie I've seen from him that I genuinely liked.
I mean, you didn't think that Knives Out was fun at all?
Sure.
It was a fun movie. I mean,
he can't help himself, dude. He can't help himself. He should have made an actual whodunit. I was done with that movie 30 minutes into it because he spoiled everything too early and tried to turn it into some weird, like it.
Because that wasn't the ultimate mystery. That was the point, you know.
It's a bigger mystery. It's like, why the fuck did this murder happen in such a weird way? Oh, it's not a murder. Something else is going on.
Yeah,
I love
that. I didn't like it, but it's fine. The movie's fine. It just wasn't really for me.
Yeah, I feel you. But I mean, I don't know. If we're talking, I brought that up because you're like, has she made any good decisions? I mean, I think even hiring J.J. Abrams was like a pretty smart choice, honestly. Because like, yeah, the soft reboot was, you know, it wasn't very creatively ambitious, but if you're going to hire someone to kind of get the fans excited again about Star Wars and make like a really fast paced, like, you know, emotionally satisfying Star Wars movie, J.J. Abrams is a pretty good choice for that, you know?
No, I completely agree. And I think I'm no studio executive, right? But if I'm going to spend, how many billion dollars was it to buy Star Wars?
Four.
Like $4 billion? Yeah. Shouldn't you have a plan in place?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't
for the
know.
Trilogy?
That was
the fact that they didn't.
It's not a good decision.
They needed to have a rough outline at the very least of what they were doing through that entire trilogy and force the directors to follow within those guidelines. The fact that they didn't do that, they were asking for it to be terrible. You can't blame, as much as I hate The Last Jedi, you can't blame Rian Johnson for it. It's all on Disney executives.
What is so different? Like you said, that The Last Jedi destroys the feel of the sequel trilogy as a trilogy. Like it basically ended it there almost. But mm-hmm. what is so different about the ending of The Last Jedi to the ending of Empire? You know,
like I will say it does
at the end.
Kind of, but it feels different. It feels like. Sure, yeah, they've been pushed up into a corner this entire time. But the main difference is, like, the overarching villain is gone. And in its place is Kylo Ren, who is a very interesting character. But it makes it a little more complicated because, like, okay, are we going to have a redemption thing? He's just the main antagonist now. Whereas, like, in Empire, you still had, like, the Emperor is like, okay, well, that's the real villain. And we can do something kind of conflicted ideas with Darth Vader, whereas like in Last Jedi at the end of it, it's like, well, I mean, unless they somehow bring back a new villain to replace him, it's going to be just Kylo Ren.
But I mean, in both of those movies, also, the primary antagonist is Vader and Kylo Ren. The Emperor in Empire Strikes Back and Snoke in Last Jedi they're not the primary antagonists.
But here's the thing, right? Darth Vader, you're not supposed to know how conflicted he is until the last movie. There's no signs of him being in conflict between his good and evil side.
Yeah.
Whereas Kylo Ren, the entire time, it's him flipping and flopping, trying to decide what to do. He's not a very effective main villain.
Well, it just makes him more of a sympathetic character.
But the whole thing is he should
villain trope, you know.
But that type of person needs somebody to be controlling them for them to turn on as well. Like, they need to have a way to... He basically, in the first movie, kills his dad, and that's supposed to turn him to the dark side, right? He's supposed to be like, okay, I've officially decided I'm evil now.
Mm-hmm.
But then he continues to flip and flop back and forth the entire time.
Yeah,
even
because
after
it's the
that.
Guilt of doing that fucking horrendous act that makes him feel like, holy shit, like, maybe I made a gigantic mistake, you know? Like, that's totally relatable.
But that's why they shouldn't have killed Snoke, though. So that there's still somebody pushing him to the dark side.
I don't know if that was the right decision, but I will tell you, I fucking hooted and hollered as soon as I saw Snoke get cut in half. I was so hyped because I was like, this is going to be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I literally was rolling my fucking eyes into cranium.
I was like, holy shit, they killed the main guy halfway through the trilogy. I think that's sick.
Yeah, I really like it because why does he need an external force to push him to the dark side when it's clear that his internally he's been doing it to himself, you know? Right from
he
the
wasn't,
beginning.
Though. He wasn't, and, though.
What do you mean?
It was Snoke pulling him to the dark side the entire time.
Well, why did he go to Snoke in the first place?
Snoke was calling to him?
Because
that was the whole thing in the flashback. Snoke had been basically spending whispers to him.
Luke saw the dark side in him, which made him, you know, he almost killed him, right? And isn't that what happened? He saw
he had a hint of doubt where he flicked his lightsaber on and then immediately regretted it.
Yeah, so he was obviously being pulled to the dark. I don't remember Snoke was whispering to him the whole time. I don't remember that.
No, so he's basically in Last Jedi. Luke is like, I sense the dark side in him. That's mm-hmm. all we get. And then in Rise of Skywalker, fucking one.
Rise.
They basically say I was communicating. He was every voice inside Kylo Ren's head. So when he heard Darth Vader talking to him, it was fucking somehow Palpatine. And then
Palpatine.
When Snoke was in his head, it was also Palpatine. And, you know.
Oh, okay. So that's an invention of the last movie, which sucked ass.
Yeah. I will say, people will say what they will about Last Jedi. Ryan Johnson did what he wanted to do. He was set up with Force Awakens, made the movie he wanted to do, and it pissed me off in Rise of Skywalker because it felt like J.J. Abrams went, well, I don't want to have to follow that, so I'm just going to retcon a bunch of shit he did. And it's the entire movie is just correcting, or quote-unquote correcting, all the things Ryan Johnson committed to. It's like, lightsaber's broken, it's fixed. Kylo Ren's helmet, it's fixed.
It's not cohesive. And as much as we can shit on The Last Jedi, which I don't like the movie, it's not Rian Johnson's fault. Nobody should have let him do that in the first place. So
you're talking to him like he's a fucking kid.
It's a good show. Like Rian Johnson at that time he proved himself with directing probably the best episode of television ever made. Ozymandias,
Breaking
Bad,
directing.
And then, he also wrote a bunch of the most, very, very hot sci-fi films of the 2010s. He was, a up-and-coming director.
Looper had a million plot holes. Was actual... I didn't like that movie very much.
Well, it was popular. A lot of people really liked it. And I think it was smart. It was definitely smart to hire someone like Rian Johnson. I don't know why...
It's not about hiring him. It's about allowing that script to be accepted and
answer the question though. What is so different about the ending of Last Jedi and the ending of Empire that makes Empire
it killed
okay?
The main villain.
That's it.
Kylo Ren
is the villain then.
And killing fucking Luke in the dumbest fucking way possible.
I love the way Luke goes out. I will fight you on that, dude. I think it's such a smart way.
It's so stupid.
Why? Just killing two characters makes it impossible to have a good ending. I don't know why that. Why
and
is that
then
the
basically wiping out all of the resistance and making it feel like it's so stupid, bro. They basically killed out all of the resistance. They killed the main bad guy. They left Kylo Ren a very not very believable bad guy. You know he's going to turn around and be a good guy in the last episode. It's very, like, you know exactly what's going to happen by the end of it.
I didn't know that Palpatine would return, but...
So that was the only thing they could do. I knew they would.
I don't understand why they even had to have Palpatine. Vader turned on, you know, Vader turned
No, they
on
didn't have to. Empire. They didn't have to, but when they bring J.J. Abrams back, you know that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, well... Anyway, what
we were talking about, we really went off the fucking tangent right there. Talking about directors who have fallen apart like John Favreau.
Yeah. Well, the other big one that I would think of is Tim Burton, who made like a lot of really, really well-received movies in the 80s and 90s. And then I don't know what the fuck happened. I guess it all started going downhill with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
What was his last original story that he did? Has he done like an original story lately? I guess Beetlejuice 2.
Yeah, Beetlejuice 2 is an original story. It's a sequel, though. I think that technically means it's an adapted script, you know?
Because he's been doing a lot of, like, he did the Dumbo. What else did he do?
He did, well, yeah, I'm trying to think of, was Dark Shadows an original thing he did?
No, that was an old TV show from like the
60s. Oh, wait, what about Big Eyes with Scarlett Johansson? That might be it.
I don't think that was an original story. I think that was...
It's Big Fish.
Big Fish is so good.
Or Corpse Bride, one of those.
Yeah. Corpse Bride also pretty good.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I don't know. I think he just...
I think he's lazy.
Yeah.
I think it's like the Jon Favreau thing. I think he's just like, I can make more money by working for these big studios and doing these like remakes and reimaginings and stuff, you know? It's like it's definitely a paycheck thing. Because he probably feels like he proved himself and got a chance to do like anything he wanted in his early career. He was like a very creative auteur, and now he's like, all right, I'm getting up there in age. I'm gonna take a back seat on that, so I don't have to think as much, make more money.
That's what makes me respect a lot of like these artists, like
Scorsese,
like Christian Bale. You can tell he never just takes a job for a paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
He only takes roles that he thinks he can contribute to and like find himself in. And there's just not enough artists like that, I feel like.
Which is why it was
same for
who?
Like in Thor, you think the same thing?
That's what I was going to bring up.
Love and Thunder.
I think he went into that and like really gave it his all. And I don't think he expected that.
So he wasn't the problem. It was Taika Waititi.
Yeah, 100%.
That was the issue. Okay. I haven't watched it because I've heard terrible things. Because that's such an interesting villain concept.
He was great. It's so weird because Gore is one of, like, probably like a top three villain in Marvel in, like, the worst Marvel movie. It's, like, very crazy. I think the movie is honestly worth watching just for him. Like, you should definitely check it out because it's a great performance. And he's a really threatening villain. It's unusual for Marvel to have a villain that's like actually kind of scary, but he's fucking terrifying in that movie, you know?
Yeah, he never phones it in. He's been in some movies that weren't like even Vice. Did y'all see Vice?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We had a gigantic argument about Vice.
Did we? Did you hate it?
No, it was me and you against Tim.
Oh, he hated it.
Tim was saying that it was like a Family Guy thing. But
Yeah.
It was a Family Guy thing.
But yeah, is there any more actors like that? There's like, or directors even that just only do. I mean, honestly, Scorsese
is the big one. Yeah, even he's fucking almost 90.
His movies aren't always the best, but
I heard
he
said some sort of quote that just like broke my heart, where he was like, "I have so many stories in me that I have to tell, and I know I'm never going to be able to tell them all because I'm not going to live forever." And I was just like, "That's so." So it's such a tragedy because he's like what, almost 90, like mid 80s.
Yeah,
he's getting up there. He's not going to be able to keep making movies for long.
Yeah, that is sad.
The good news is he's told a lot more than most. I mean,
he has told a ton of stories.
I don't think he's going to have many regrets.
Yeah. Well, speaking of old men,
maybe regrets, just shark tales. Anyway,
I wanted to bring up I want to talk about Stan Lee for a little bit actually today, because you know I'm planning to do a video on this. It's gonna be called like Stan Lee and the Thin Gray Line of Creative Ownership, because Stan Lee is, you know, if you ask the public, like general public, what they think of Stan Lee, it would assume that he's like the godfather of Marvel, that he created all of these characters. And in a way he did. But, you know, obviously the way that comics work, it's like there's a writer, but there's also an artist who also shapes the story a lot. And in some cases, the artist shapes the story more than the writer does. And particularly for Marvel, like back then, have you guys heard of the Marvel method? This was like Stan Lee's invention.
No.
So basically the way it would work is this, you know, this is called the Marvel method, the way that they would come up with characters and come up with stories. So the writer provides an outline of the story. This could be as detailed as the writer wants, but back in the day, it was all pretty much rough sketches. That outline gets passed to the penciler, who then plots out the comic based on the outline. The pages get passed back to the writer, who now writes in proper dialogue and narrative captions, and then over to the inker, colorist, blah, blah, blah. And the editor gets the final pass. So basically it's just like, the writer said, this is how like Spider-Man was invented. But he's like, Stan Lee was like, you know, I want to have a story about a kid gets bit by a spider, has spider powers. Steve Ditko, what do you think of that? And Steve Ditko basically creates like the iconic version of Spider-Man that we all know. And not just visually, just also the, you know, some of the best early stories of Spider-Man were basically Steve Ditko's sole invention. Because as their creative relationship went on, Stan Lee sort of took a back seat and Steve Ditko is taking on a lot of the story elements. So it's like, it's kind of just unfortunate.
Let's look. Okay. So I'm making a comic, right?
Yeah.
I wrote a script about a robot gigolo, whatever, right? And I wrote the entire script. I'm basically creating all the things, and then I'm passing it over to an artist, and he's creating all the character designs. He's doing, I'm giving him like a rough idea of what I want him to look like, right? But I obviously want him to have his input as an artist. But like, should he get creator credits if I'm paying him money to make the thing for me?
Well, I mean, I think the difference is your script is very detailed. You know, Stan Lee wasn't giving Steve Ditko a script even. You know, he would say, you know, it's like, you know, talking about the invention of Spider-Man when it first, you know, the inception of the idea. He basically said what I told you guys before: gets bit by a spider, has spider powers, he's a teenager, blah blah blah. And Steve Ditko goes out and creates basically the big stories of Spider-Man, like. He didn't have as much as you have with your story. You know what I mean?
But here's the thing, though. It's you're getting paid for a job, though. Like, if you he's one's an employee, the other one's the boss. You know?
Yeah, but Stanley didn't own Marvel. He was just
the editor. He was the main.
He was the main editor.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but Stan Lee is given the credit for creating Spider-Man most of the time. I think now it's better.
I think it's hard to know without knowing the actual contracts that everybody signed. But it's one of those things. Whenever you're doing something for a paid gig, you're not always going to get the credit you necessarily deserve. You know?
Yeah, but I'm not even talking about like, you know, IP laws or anything. I'm talking about just like the way people perceive it out in the world, you know. It's mostly because Stan Lee in particular was just very good at being personable with the media. He was going out and doing interviews all the time. When the MCU started, he was doing cameos all the time. Steve Ditko is a very reclusive person who doesn't do interviews at all, you know. So obviously no one even really knows who Steve Ditko is unless you're like a fan of this stuff, a super fan. But because of Stan Lee's public profile, he gets that honor of creating Spider-Man and Hulk and Fantastic Four and all this stuff, when it kind of more was Ditko and Kirby too, you know. Like, it's just, for me, that's just kind of unfortunate that it ended up working out that way, you know.
And this is I'm also bringing this up because this is also a very similar story. It was the conception of Batman, where Bob Kane came up with the basic concept, and even he gave his own like original art, which was like for Batman, which was a guy in a red jumpsuit, domino mask. He was blonde and he had big mechanical bat wings. And then he passed it off to Bill Finger, and Bill Finger basically made everything interesting about Batman that we know.
Yeah.
And the iconic design.
Because I feel like
it took till recently till he was actually being credited. Because like you look at Batman 1989 and a lot of those older movies, it just says Batman created by Bob Kane.
Yeah.
And I think recently for Batman v Superman and onward, it's been now it's Bob Kane and Bill Finger.
Yeah. So think, what about like the Nolan movies were just Bob Kane?
Yeah, it just said Bob Kane. I'm sure.
I think a lot of the like production companies, especially back in the day, are very predatory. I think that's why it's really good that there are a lot of like creator owned production companies nowadays, like Image Comics and stuff, where you're basically, there's no chance of you just having everything stolen from you. But that's a risk you kind of take going into working for these big companies because you get so much more exposure than you would elsewhere, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I took a job writing at DC, I'm just going to have to accept that if I make some new character and it goes crazy, like I'm not getting any credit for that.
It yeah.
sucks, but you're working for Marvel, right? You get to move on to make other things. And if you want the full credit, work for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, it's just in the case of these comic characters, it really is just insane. Just because of what you're talking about. Like if you work for these companies and create a character that first becomes really popular in comics, which you will get paid for that. If you'll get more money if your comic does well. But these comic characters get adapted into film and make billions and billions of dollars. And the people who actually created them and their entire origin story, which is really important for the movie, they don't fucking see any of that. Like I have to look up the exact number, but like Stan Lee died with a ridiculously low amount of money considering all of the characters.
Well, explain the premise behind that, because I feel like that's a little bit of a different issue.
What do you mean? Oh, like, so he had 50 million.
Oh, that Marvel penny pinching.
He had $50 million at his death. So that's more than I thought, but it's
pretty good.
It's still like, I just considering the fucking multi-billion dollar empire of the MCU now, and Stan Lee, you know, I've just said that he didn't necessarily create all these characters, but he was there, you know, he was like Steve Jobs, you know, like the idea man for a lot of these things. And then Ditko was like what was the other guy's name? Wozenberg or I forget.
Wozniak.
Watsonberg.
Nick, what were you saying? Explain that concept. Explain what concept?
No, the elder abuse.
So there's a documentary being made from the guy who worked. He worked for Stan Lee at the end of his life. Yeah, he was an assistant. He's like, I have all this footage of Stan Lee being, you know, elder abuse, like people basically telling him to go do speaking events when he's like 90 years old. And he's like, can we be done with this? Like, I don't really feel like doing this. And like, oh, you just got to go get one more, Stan. Like, they're basically like sucking him dry at the end of his life when he should just be like relaxing, you know? And people are just getting mad because it's like, if you had all this footage and why didn't you like say something while he was alive when there could have been something done to help him, you know, like you're just fucking profiting off it yourself.
It's really sad because it's like from watching it, like his whole personality seems like the kind of person that really wants to please people. So I feel like that kind of person is really easy to take advantage of.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Have you guys also looked into like this assistant that is making the doc and how it's kind of sketchy?
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard a lot of things about it.
So this guy that witnessed all this elder abuse was like, I didn't say anything, but I just recorded all of it. And then I saved it. And what, Stan died in 2019. So he's had this for like 6 years and just hasn't said anything. And now he's on Kickstarter being like, okay, I need $300,000 to finish this documentary.
It seems like a very calculated thing.
It really does. I don't think this guy cares about Stan. If he's like, I'll waited 5 years till I got all of it, and then I'm going to ask for extra money instead of just, you know, put, if you really cared, he would have just put the footage out there or made it right away.
Well, he was saying like, I didn't have the power to stop it at the time because I was just an assistant or whatever. But it's like, I don't know, man, you're like, you're working for Stan Lee. If you have a story and footage of like evidence of elder abuse, you can fucking go to the New York Times and they'll respond to you if you have that footage. Yeah, like they want that story. So like you,
they'll
did
pay
have
you.
The
they
power.
Will pay you.
Yeah,
yeah. So it's like he wanted the prestige more than anything.
Well, it's also you're kind of flushing your career down the toilet when you come out with those kind of things too, though. Like you're kind of kind of be blacklisted.
Yeah, I mean, he's thinking that this is going to jumpstart his career, when really it's, like you said, he's basically blacklisted now, because I don't think anyone's going to be very interested in this documentary when it comes out, because of all the controversy around him.
I mean, I think people will watch it, but I just think it's kind of scummy, just at a base level.
Yeah.
At least the way he went about it. And then there's all these stretch goals that are like, you get a signed autographed thing from Stan.
Yeah. I mean,
all right.
Stan Lee's legacy is just really interesting to me, though. Like, how do you guys, like, have you guys ever listened to Alan Moore talk about Stan Lee?
No.
Like, there's a lot of clips online about Alan Moore. I mean, he basically made a very bad name for himself, like, in the comic artists or comic writer circles at the highest levels, you know, because people just kind of saw him as a huckster almost. But at the same time, he did a lot of good for the industry by being that kind of like huckster personality, you know.
He's the type of person that actual artists will hate, like, that's because they don't see the value in what he does, right? Yeah. they see the value in the actual art. They don't see that without somebody like him marketing their shit wouldn't be near as popular as it is.
That's very
so true. I think it's just somebody being short-sighted because of the side of the spectrum they're on. Like, people don't respect comic writers at all, because they're not the ones creating these characters, creating the art, right?
Yeah.
But in reality, they probably wouldn't have been able to make a story as good without that person.
Like, if I watched this documentary the other day called In Search of Steve Ditko, where they actually, you know, because like I was saying before, Steve Ditko is very reclusive. So this guy, Jonathan Ross, he's a journalist. He was trying to find Steve Ditko again to do an interview. But he interviewed Alan Moore and Stan Lee about Steve Ditko. And when he's talking to Stan, he was like asking him about the creation of Spider-Man. And Stan, like, he's it's very funny, like, the way he talks about it, because he's like, I told Steve that, like, I consider him a co-creator of Spider-Man. But he's like, Steve was mad because he's like, oh, you consider me that? You're not just saying I am that? And, like, Jonathan Ross kind of, like, caught him in a chokehold almost, like a verbal chokehold. Because he's like, well, I mean, is he the co-creator? And Stanley's like, well, I don't really think so. Like, I think the guy who comes up with the idea is the creator, you know? Like, he just won't give it. He won't. Give credit where credit's due, kind of, you know what I mean? Which is why he has that bad reputation.
So. Yeah. Because that's not a good look.
Yeah, it's really not.
not really. It was my idea and then all of his hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He was like, Jonathan Ross was like, well, you know, if Steve Ditko didn't make those wonderful drawings, Spider-Man wouldn't be as popular as it was. And he's like, well, then I would have just created something that didn't succeed. You know, it's just like he really won't give credit where credit's due. But I don't know. It's interesting to me because, like, most people think of Stan Lee as like the godfather of comics, you know, like this super important figure. But like, if you dig a little bit deeper, he's kind of a controversial figure, which I think is pretty interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Because all it takes is throwing him into a cameo in a big Marvel movie, and then people...
Alan Moore is a fucking weirdo, by the way.
Yeah, he's into occult magic, I found out.
Oh, that's so sick.
Yeah.
I think he's an actual wizard.
Dude, on the documentary, he introduced himself as, I'm a like an author and a magician, is what he said. I'm an author and a magician.
Doesn't Alan Moore like... He sounds like he would just be the scariest person to talk to. Like, I feel like he'd be really intimidating.
Oh, yeah. He's incredibly intimidating. I mean,
one thing I've learned... Oh, good.
No, I was just going to ask you guys, like, how do you feel about Alan Moore's take on Rorschach? Because, like, Alan Moore has talked a lot about how you're not supposed to empathize with Rorschach. Like, he's not a good guy, but yeah. He has people coming up to him all the time. Like, Rorschach is my favorite character. Rorschach saved my life.
I love Rorschach. Shit, you
know? Like, people think of Rorschach as the protagonist, but like Alan Moore, he said, like, if you, those people who come up to me and say that, like, please get the fuck away from me because you're probably a psycho. You know? I mean, how do you guys feel about that?
I think Alan Moore is a pretentious piece of shit as well. I think he's a good writer. I think he's a good writer, but I think he's a pretentious piece of shit.
Well, and for saying that?
I think any character you connect to, as long as you give them like enough of a backstory about them to understand their motives, I think Rorschach is Rorschach's motives are completely understandable. I don't think you should say what he's doing is necessarily good, but I think it's 100% understandable to like want him to succeed in his goal, because I think it is technically the right thing to do.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, it's not necessarily his motivations that are the problem. It's his views, which he makes pretty clear throughout the comic. You know, like, he hates gay people. He has, like, there is something that he wrote in his file, like, Adrian Veidt, possible homosexual, must investigate further. You know, like,
But you also have to look at it in the context of the Watchmen universe. It's not that out of character.
Is racism justified in homophobia?
No, but that's kind of the norm in that world. People are more amped up and shitty than the average. And I think of all of the evil in the world, I think Rorschach's the lesser of it.
Yeah. I think he made Rorschach to show that in the real world or whatever, if there was a guy like, I think, you know, because Rorschach is kind of a comment or a critique of Batman, I think, in a way.
Yeah.
He's the detective character, but like Moore is saying, if Batman actually existed, he would be a stinky psycho who like breaks into people's houses to eat beans and is like kind of like someone you would never want to hang out with. It's extremely difficult, you know, because it would take a kind of psycho to do something like that, you know.
Yeah, and I also don't think it's the author's choice how people interpret their work either. I think once it's out there, who cares? Like, it's not up to you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he feels like people can feel however they want about Rorschach. I think it was just surprising to him that Rorschach got such a positive response from people, you know?
That's not how, I mean, I feel like he's very judgmental of it.
Oh, he totally is, yeah.
Did you guys know the original creation of Watchmen was supposed to be, like, set in DC? Like, Alan Moore wanted to take a bunch of D-tier superheroes and make the story of Watchmen with it, went to DC, and they were just like, no, we don't want you to do that because we might use those characters. And he was like, all right, fuck you guys, I'll go make my own original characters. The characters he wanted to use, the two of them specifically, so the comedian in Watchmen was originally Peacemaker.
Oh, wow.
Dr. Manhattan was Captain Atom, and the other one was like Night Owl was based on Blue Beetle, like Ted Kord. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just think that's super interesting. Yeah. He was just like, I want to use these fucking characters nobody cares about.
It's so much better that he went off and did it on his own and created new characters. Because I love all of the characters in Watchmen. I think they're all great. Did you guys watch the TV show?
I saw the movie in bits when I was a kid. So I basically haven't seen the movie. And I haven't read the original comic, and I have not watched the show. So one day I just need to go through fucking all of them.
I have consumed every bit of Watchmen media except Doomsday Clock.
Oh, okay, that's.
I've read Doomsday Clock too.
I've heard Doomsday Clock is pretty mixed.
It's not amazing.
Okay, because they try to mush the DC universe into Watchmen, right?
Yeah, or other way around, more like right.
Oh, that's right.
I hate the show so much, but whatever.
Why do you hate the show?
We'll have an episode about it. I don't want to get into it right now.
Oh, yeah, Ethan's...
You can go into it a little bit. I will forget by then.
I've already done my whole... I've already gone into, like, hating The Last Jedi. I don't want to come off as a mauler type person.
Just commit. Be a hater.
I can't do both in one episode.
Let's have a session where we hate on Mauler for a second. Fuck that guy.
I don't understand why.
I'm just kidding. I don't even know what he. I've never even watched his videos.
It's just rage bait. Like it's just.
It's pretty much.
I don't understand why somebody's whole channel should be about hating things in general. Not even just Mahler specifically.
It's just like an unbridled catastrophe. Part 17. Spider-Man sucks. Zendaya is a bitch. Is that what it's like?
Is
that
Ryan awesome? Johnson is a stinky boot of a human being.
Yeah, he's one of those Kathleen guys that's Kennedy. Like, I can mathematically prove that this movie is objectively bad, even though it's a piece of art form that is subjective.
Allow me to speak for 5 hours, uninterrupted.
Wait, how does he... What's that? I've heard people say that about him.
I haven't watched his videos. I've just heard that he thinks a movie can be like objectively a bad movie.
Yeah. I've seen criticisms of him. One clip I've seen of his is like, Remember, and have you guys both seen the Doctor Strange sequel, the Multiverse of Madness?
No, I saw bits, but I didn't really watch
it. So, like, there's one part in the movie where Doctor Strange is in an alternate universe, and they're at a crosswalk, and in this universe, red means go, and green means stop. Because it's, you know, it's just a fucking little joke that they're in an alternate universe. Things are different there. It's just like a way to visually, you know, illustrate that difference between the two universes. And it's kind of like a funny thing in the movie, which is like, it's like whatever. But Mahler spends like fucking 6 minutes or whatever saying how this is like the most ridiculous thing. Like, human beings are hardwired to think red things are bad. Why would the green be go? Like, you know, it's just like, I don't understand. Is that like objectivity in film? Like saying something like that?
I don't know.
I don't fucking
understand. I've just seen that my favorite meme I see is when it was like, you guys know who Jenny Nicholson is?
No.
No.
She's like a YouTuber. She doesn't upload often. She'll make like one video a year that's like 5 hours, and it'll be like a deep dive on like a Star Wars hotel at Disneyland. But she made one video years ago where it was just like, well, I didn't really like Joker, like the movie Joker. And it's like a 22-minute video. And then the immediate next video under it is an 8.5-hour video of like Mahler and all his friends like just talking about her video for... It's not the entire thing, but it's just that juxtaposition is so funny.
Wait, so they were like cutting down her video?
That's a big thing they do, is they constantly will pull up other people's reviews, usually ones they don't agree with, and then they'll just like pick it apart for like 5 hours.
Reviewing reviews.
Oh. Yeah, pretty much.
That's
yeah.
Great. Good content.
It's just such a strange way to live your life, like with that much negativity. Like, imagine walking or like, I don't, maybe I'll do this, but like, I don't have a negative thought about another person for more than like probably like 1 second at most of my days.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think negatively about people, and they like, imagine that being your entire like goal. Like, that's your content you make, is just trying to like find something to tear somebody down about.
Well, do you,
it's insane to me.
Do you see him as kind of like a cinema sins type critique? Is that like...
Pretty kind of, a little bit. I think CinemaSins is fucking devoid of any value, but it, I don't know if it's that bad.
I don't like CinemaSins either.
Sorry about the sirens, guys. I don't know if you can hear it.
It's okay.
Did you hear it?
Well, you gotta keep committing crimes. Yeah, we heard it.
But yeah, no, I don't know. I never really got into his content. I never watched it. It seemed like some, just from the titles, I was like, unbridled fucking whatever.
I watched some of his Star Wars stuff when it was coming out, only because I hated The Last Jedi, but even that was too much for me.
Oh, that's probably how he got most of his views, were from Last Jedi coming out.
I saw, like, I did this video a while ago that I ended up deleting, but I was talking about these guys kind of, and I was watching some of Nerdrotic's content as like research. I found a fucking podcast clip of Nerdrotic and a bunch of his friends. They were looking at a picture of Brie Larson's feet, and apparently they thought they looked disgusting. So she's like, they're like, all right, would Brie Larson's feet being this fucked up, like, would that change your decision to smash or not? And they were all doing smash or pass based on that. I was like, this is the most disgusting.
Hold on, I have to look up her feet. Hold on. Let me look up her feet.
But they were just fucking.
Yeah, that's fucking gross.
Like,
oh my god, she has a kind of, she has like one long toe. It's not that bad.
Regardless, it's just like the concept of that. Like, how do you get that fucking detached from reality and like civil society, that you think that's okay? You know,
I think they just thought it was funny, and I'm not saying that's okay.
It's not funny, like, though. It's fucking disgusting.
It's just kind
of I'm not saying it is funny. I'm saying that is what they thought it was.
I mean, I don't think they think it's funny. I think they're so mean-spirited.
I actually don't know who they
that
are.
They just fucking. They think it's okay to do shit like that. Like, it's.
But how many views did they get? That's the thing. Like,
I mean, a good amount. Nerdrotic's got like 1.3 million views, and he literally last three videos in 2 weeks were all about Snow White.
Of course, yeah.
That's the thing. It gets the views, so there's no negative reinforcement for any of this. Like, I know that you disagree with it, but like, all the views are coming in, and they think it's fine. So it's just gonna keep getting worse.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the views come in, whatever. I mean, I think it's fucking disgusting. I don't know. I like, not all of it is fucking disgusting. A lot of it is just stupid content that I'm not going to engage with. That's just rage bait or whatever. but literally just fucking talking about some actress's feet with a close-up picture on it saying, is that going to make me fuck her or not? Like, that's fucking gross, dude. Like, I just can't believe that.
I mean,
people hate, like, people were hating. I even forgot kind of why people were hating on Brie Larson so much, but that was like, you could say anything mean and people would just jump on board.
Well, she made some comments about, like, film, like the film criticism circle not being diverse enough. She was like going through percentages of, like, you know, there's only X amount of percent of black women or whatever, basically any group that's not white men in like professional film criticism, which really you know, pissed people off. And she was just like outspoken about her role in the MCU and all that stuff. I don't know. She just made herself kind of like the center of a lot of controversies by making political statements in the lead up to Captain Marvel being released, which is,
what do y'all think about that?
Her, like, her making Marvel political statements and stuff.
No, not her making political statements, but like, do you think there's enough like equality in terms of like film reviews? I feel like film reviews are so like independent nowadays. It's like nobody's really stopping women from stepping in. And
yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess like I support like DEI initiatives, I think, just as like a way
but
to.
But I don't think this is something you can DEI.
I mean, you can implement DEI at any level of business or industry for sure. It's just like it's like hiring protocols. It's like at its best, it's not supposed to say like, oh, you're white, so you can't get this job. We need to get someone of color. It's supposed to make sure that companies are like, they're widening the scope
of their
pool of potential candidates. So they're looking for people that are, you know, just a more diverse pool of candidates is what it's supposed to be, you know. But since obviously it's turned into like the biggest buzzword of the year, and Trump and Elon are trying to fucking any business or, you know, any government agency that had a DEI initiative is like getting fucking totally trounced right now, you know. So it's, I don't even know if people really know what it means anymore. It's just, it's the same thing as woke. It's become the new woke.
It's just not, yeah. So it's whatever their new buzzword is for the next couple of years.
Yeah. So I don't know. But yeah, to answer your question, I think that I don't know. I don't know how much you can do to change it, to make it more equal. I think over the past 10 years, it's probably getting more equal on its own, I would assume, you know?
That's more what I'm saying is like, even in, like, we were doing that Discord for a long time for filmmakers or for YouTubers that do stuff about film. I just don't think that women care about film as much, like, as far as like just getting that deep into it and discussing. I think they definitely are out there, but how often do you run into YouTube channels of women giving, like, making video essays and things like that? It doesn't feel as common.
I think maybe like in our lane it's definitely more men, but I see a lot of female video essayists that talk about politics. That's common. Like in BreadTube, I would say it's like probably almost 50-50 men and women.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
But that's what I mean. Like I think YouTube, there's nothing that's like specifically blocking people out, but you can see through the numbers that there just aren't as many of them. And I think that I don't understand the Brie Larson stuff, but I think that her saying that isn't necessarily that people are blocking out women in those fields. I think there's just less of them trying to get into it.
That might be the case. I mean, especially if you look at, we've talked about this before, if you look at the numbers, like the gender breakdown of the people who watch our videos in particular, like the only time I had more than 10 or 15% women was when I was doing like a spooky true crime type piece, you know, then it was more women than men.
I have like, I think it's like 15%, and I'm happy with that number. Like, that's like, to me, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Because I know that there's a lot of people that we talk to that have like are in like the 3-5%, which is crazy.
I mean, it depends. I'm sure like my last two videos were about Invincible. So that's probably 3-5%. I'm going to check right now. Yeah. What is yours, Ethan? Yeah.
My gender spectrum.
Yeah, your gender breakdown.
Let's see. I think it's about as bad as you'd expect. Let me see. Age and gender.
Yeah, my for the Invincible video I did, it's 3.5% female. So
My total lifespan is 6.7% female.
Okay, well, that's pretty good.
So not good.
So my but my White Lotus video is more women than men. That's 54% women.
Heck yeah.
So. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But my whole thing is like we talk about this separately. Like we wanted more women in there, especially because like it's good to have an alternative opinion on a lot of our videos, you know, and how we could appeal to women more. And also just seeing the different types of content they create. But we couldn't find any. And also at a certain point, we didn't want them in there because it would have been probably a negative environment for them. Yeah. Not due to us, but.
But not, like, yeah, not doing we that actually we should clarify that.
but we did genuinely like want more of them in the space. We just it just wasn't an option.
Yeah, we had one. There was one woman in the Discord.
I would say it wasn't exactly the problem that we were there. It was other problems. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah.
But would you guys mind if I brought up this White Lotus video for a second? Because I
do it. I'll talk White Lotus with you.
So a couple weeks ago, after the White Lotus had made four episodes, there was four episodes released, I was extremely disappointed with the season. I was like, this shit sucks. This is the worst season of the White Lotus. It's so slow. So many of the characters are so fucking boring. They got Walton Goggins, and the only thing the guy does is fucking look into the middle distance and like have a longing look on his face. I was like, this is bullshit. Like, why isn't he being utilized more? Then kept watching, stuck with it because of the strength of the past two seasons. I was like, I'll keep with it. Now, after the finale aired last night, I was like, actually, this is like the best finale of the show. I really like this.
Got you back in.
Yeah, it was like, this show fucking totally won me back. So what I did was on my video, because I'm not wanting to delete the video, even though I kind of don't stand by most of it anymore. Although, you know, I still don't like their first half, so I'll stick to that. But like, I feel bad for having that up now, knowing that I think it's actually good. But it's kind of like, I wanted to talk about like a larger conversation about like how you can potentially edit yourself or revise things, even though the internet's fucking forever. You can't edit a YouTube video to add like an amendment to anything or addendum or whatever. The best you can do is a pinned comment that most people aren't going to read, you know? So it kind of just sucks.
We're going to be wrong.
What?
Yeah, that's the thing. And also, like, we all grow as people. I feel like there have even been times in this short amount of time on the podcast where I've given a score and then like 2 days later, I'm like, that was a bit high. You know, like I've been wrong on stuff. I think there's nothing wrong with that. As long as you like, if you talk about it again, you go, yeah, I've changed my tune on that exact thing. Like if you made the video that was like, I was wrong about White Lotus or whatever, then that would, you know, that's acknowledging, listen, I wasn't really into this, but they won me back over.
Yeah,
I think as long as you're honest about it, I think there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah, it just like for me, it personally sucks because the video is getting pushed more now after the finale, and it's like,
yeah,
most of the comments are agreeing with me. They're like, yeah, this fucking shit sucks, but a lot of them aren't, you know. So I don't know.
I think as a content creator, I'm probably going to be wrong a lot. That's because a lot of especially my videos, they're very much based on my feelings more so than any kind of like fact. So this is going to happen.
We're in the
review
space.
Yeah, I don't really care if I'm wrong, and I'll always admit that I'm wrong. That's really the biggest thing. If I realize I'm wrong, I'll admit I'm wrong.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's what I did, but you don't care about being wrong? I fucking hate being wrong.
No.
I mean, you're just going to... As we change and grow, we learn more things. We learn things about ourselves that we didn't know 5-10 years ago. You're gonna be wrong.
You guys are gonna sit there and tell me that you're like, oh, I'm wrong, and everyone on the internet knows it, and I who cares? Or not everyone on the internet, but like fucking 6-7 thousand people who saw this video are like,
I feel like
this
you,
guy's
I
wrong
feel like you
as
know
hell.
Me. I feel like you know me based on a lot of the questions I ask you. That like, I feel like most people would just Google and pretend like they already know it, but I'm not like that. If so, I feel like somebody knows something better than me, I'll ask them. Like I don't feel like I'm like the all-knowing knowledge man of everything, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things I don't know often.
And I think trying to live in a world where you're like constantly, I think it's good to be constantly editing yourself and making sure like you're like, all right, I got this locked down. But, like, you know, mistakes happen. And as long as, like, you're honest about it, I think there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I've been wrong in videos and stuff, yeah.
But, Nick, what you're talking about, like, not knowing something isn't being wrong, you know? You just, that's like an area of knowledge that you don't potentially have, and you're asking someone.
But I'll still sometimes talk about things that I'm not 100% knowledgeable in, and I'll probably say things that are wrong, and then I'll find out later. I mean, it just isn't something that I constantly worry about.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not constantly worrying about it, but like when stuff like this happens, I'm like, oh, God damn it. I just like, I'm kicking myself, you know?
I think that's but now you have the perfect example to make a follow-up video.
Yeah. I mean, I might have done that if this video did really, really, really well, but it didn't really do that well. So I'm not going to like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll rush it.
Also, one of those things, there's a lot of content creators y'all probably watch that you know have bad opinions about certain things, right?
Like,
you've seen content.
JonTron? You guys remember that?
I love JonTron, dude. He's like one of my favorite YouTubers.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, JonTron, everyone thought JonTron was a wholesome guy, super wholesome, and then he goes, does a debate with Destiny, and everyone finds out he's a fucking Nazi. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Nazi.
It wasn't that bad.
Yeah,
it wasn't that bad, dude. He was spewing Nazi talking points for fucking 3 hours. It was insane.
Maybe I didn't watch the whole thing, but I'm not really talking about that. I'm talking about okay, y'all, Moist Critical, for example, right?
Yeah.
I don't agree with him, really.
He does movie reviews all the time, and he understands movies on like the most baseline level possible. Like, he doesn't even understand what a theme is in a film.
Mm-hmm.
So like his reviews, I look at them and I'm like, this, I have to take this with a grain of salt. But if he's talking about, there's certain things I'm sure he is more knowledgeable about, right? If he's talking about like slapping the slap games, like he's probably super knowledgeable about the slapping fight thing. But it's the same for me, right? I'm probably going to be wrong about a lot of things, and I'm probably going to seem dumb about some things, and people will know that about me, and that's fine.
Yeah, it's right? We're all human. Yeah, true. I'm scarred though. I get scarred from like. In my Dune video, I made a mistake and like a misinterpretation. I spoiled something because I was just new at this and I wasn't like thinking, you know. And now, like, to this day, I still get comments about it, angry ass comments like, "You fucking dick, you spoiled Children of Dune. What the fuck?" You know, like all that shit. And it's just like, I feel bad that I did that. You know, like it hurts me to know that like people were watching my video and got like that angry to make a comment. You know, like. I want people to watch my content to be like informed, entertained, generally a good vibe. But when they get that, when that happens, I'm like, oh fuck, you know, like I fucked up. Dude, that guy's day, you know,
I get the most schizo comments. I've sent some of them to y'all, but dude, I don't know what it is about my channel. I get the weirdos, man. It stresses me out.
But you don't know what I'm talking about. Like, you don't get that sinking feeling when you get a comment like that. Like,
There was one video I deleted because I said that I was like, oh, Bong Joon-ho's Mickey 17's coming out, and that's pretty exciting. He's directed stuff like Thirst, and I was like, I got so many comments being like, he didn't direct Thirst, that was Park Chan-wook. And I was like, fuck, now I look racist as fuck. So I got rid of that.
This racist guy thinks Bong Joon-ho directed every Asian movie.
So that's why funny. I deleted that video. And it didn't do well anyway, so.
Yeah.
Maybe if I did something like that, I'd feel weird about it.
Yeah, like, I was like, this is a bad look.
Nick's like, yeah, Ethan, that's actually genuinely bad. That's horrible. Because, like, I mean.
I feel like.
Yeah, go on, Nick.
No, it just depends, I guess. But that's not so much that I don't know. That's just a mistake in my video. Like, whenever I'm looking at my own work and there's something I'm criticizing about myself that I did, that hurts me more than some comment saying something rude.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I should, I should say I'm not necessarily wrong in the White Lotus video. It's just an opinion, you know?
No, you just, yeah.
It's my, I feel wrong because now I don't really stand behind a lot of that stuff. So it's like, I don't really have to amend it. I just felt like I did.
I think you even said, like, We got 4 episodes left, but I really doubt they're going to win me back or something like that. just like, holy shit, I'm eating my fucking words.
I should just fucking edit the Curb Your Enthusiasm music into the end. And then if I could do absolutely. That, I'd be happy. But
just start the video with that, saying that, and then just...
yeah. It is my turn to... what's it called? Recommend.
Give us a rec.
Yeah. Did anyone have any final thoughts before we do this? Or
no, I think go for it, man.
Hold on. I'm going to put it out there. I give everyone in the world who listens to this podcast the permission to say dwarves instead of little people.
So if we're talking about fantasy games, sure, go for it.
No, real people. If you want to call them dwarves,
I don't think you have the right to
Nick
say.
Just giving the set I have the debate.
You have a pass.
Wait till just come back next episode to hear Nick's opinions on black people.
Nick's like that kid who was selling N-word passes to his friends at school.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know about that.
Okay, so
you want to set up this rec? Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell them why?
Yeah. Wait, you want to set it up?
No. Do you want to set it up? Tell the audience why this is the.
I'll set it up. I'm recommending the 2023 Christopher Nolan film Oppenheimer because it's between me and Nick. Ethan hasn't seen it. I don't remember how Tim felt about it. But since the inception of this podcast, we probably argued about Oppenheimer more than anything else. Maybe Dune a little bit more, but Oppenheimer is probably number one. So I just want to take the opportunity to take an episode to finally fucking hash it out. We're gonna have an intellectual battle to the death over Oppenheimer, me and Nick. So I'm excited.
I don't want to watch this movie again.
Well, I'm excited.
Dude, all right. You recommended Psycho Goreman. You knew I was gonna hate it.
Yeah.
You owe me one. So
I didn't think
this is his pass.
But it's okay.
All right, if you guys enjoyed this video and you're watching on on YouTube, please leave us a like and a comment. Same goes for our audio listening platforms such as Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And go ahead and leave us a 5-star rating on that because that really helps the pod out. If you do not want to be spoiled for Christopher Nolan's 2023 Best Picture winning film,
and Best
Oppenheimer,
Director.
And Best Director, then make sure to watch it before next episode. But until then, everybody... As our patron saint of the podcast says, get stuck.
Get stuck-winized.